Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone.
WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining me on the Commons today is Professor Evan McKenzie. Evan is the author of Privatopia, Homeowner Associations and the Rise of Residential Private Government. He is also an attorney and a political science professor at the University of Illinois in Chicago, and teaches HOA law at the John Marshall School of Law. And I don't know how he keeps, how he does it all, but he manages to juggle it all. Evan, you have my undying admiration for everything that you do.
Thank you, Sue. It's always nice to be talking with you.
It's always fun having you on, and I'm excited. There's a lot going on.
Yes. Yes, there sure is.
And congratulations, I guess they're in order, because you have now licensing laws in Illinois. It's something that you have wanted for a while.
Yes, we finally, well, the governor hasn't signed this. He has until about the end of August, I think the 26th or 28th of August, to sign this bill, I believe, because we have, the governor has 60 days to sign or veto legislation. But it did pass both houses of the state legislature, manager licensing, and I think that it's a good law because it has some. It seems to me to have some real teeth in it. It's it provides for some pretty substantial penalties, up to $10,000 fines, loss of license, and that sort of thing. It requires training, 20 hours of training, passing a test, and then there's a whole long list of things that the commission can use to jerk someone's license or impose sanctions on them, including, well, by the way, there's also, this requires some background. You have to be a person of good character to get the license in the first place, which means things like felony convictions and even certain, they can even consider misdemeanors as a grounds for not issuing a license. And then for violating any of the provisions of the act, they can take your license entirely or impose a substantial fine. So, I mean, it's a fairly detailed law. It creates a special commission of seven people, five from the industry and two owners. And in general, I have always believed, as you know, that the lack of regulation of property managers, of government regulation, and I think it has to be government regulation, is one of the biggest problems that owners face, because the property managers, I mean, attorneys make enough mistakes, but at least with attorneys, they have the fear of losing their license. That's always in the back of their minds. They can always have disciplinary action taken against them, and they can lose their livelihood. And that's a big, big loss. And I realize that they make mistakes and they do bad things sometimes, but most of the time they are restrained, at least by the ethical requirements of their profession, and by the fear of discipline. These property managers are handling millions and millions of dollars of people's money, advising boards of directors on the meaning of the covenants, which they aren't even qualified to do, but they do it anyway, telling people how the association is going to be run, holding themselves out as experts, and just have all kinds of responsibilities that are given to them by these volunteer directors. And plenty of them have no professional training at all, none whatsoever. And no one knows what their background is, because if you don't have a license, there's no background check. And they're not worried about anyone. The only thing you can do is file a civil lawsuit against them and wait 5 years for the end of it. I mean, it's a ridiculous situation that there's even one state in this country where property managers are not licensed. It's complete insanity. I mean, you can't sell a hot dog on a street corner without a license. You can't give somebody a haircut without a license. You can't spray pesticides without a license. Here's the irony. You know, the pesticide people come around to the association and they spray, or the lawn treatment people come around to spray some Roundup or something. Well, they need licenses. But the person who hired them, the property manager, who's handling all this money, doesn't need one. That's insanity. It's complete insanity. And the objections that I've heard to this, I have yet to hear one intelligent objection to this, and yet people do object. They say it's going to cost money, which it does. It's going to cost, in Illinois, it's going to be $50 a year for every association that has more than 10 units, because you can still manage a development of less than 10 units without a license. But I don't. I think most of the small associations usually don't have outside management.
Evan, let me ask you a question. You're an attorney and you have a license.
Right.
Who paid for that license?
What do you mean?
When you got your license, who paid for it?
Me.
Why is the association paying for a license when it's the manager that has to be licensed?
I have
a real estate license and I paid for it.
Yeah, the managers will pay for the licensing too.
But why are associations being charged?
Well, what the associations are being charged for is the activities of the regulatory commission. The managers pay for the examination and they pay for their training, so they're paying for the privilege of getting a license to practice, and I assume there'll be an annual fee for this, but I don't know. But the oversight commission that regulates this is going to be paid for by it's $50 a year per association, and then an additional $1 per unit.
Wow. Is this?
And the reason that they should pay is because they're getting a benefit out of it. I mean, I don't know what the fees would have to be like in order to finance the whole thing from fees alone. In other words, if you said the managers were going to pay the entire bill, I'm wondering how that would all work. You see, with lawyers, and it varies because this is done differently in different states, but, you know, registration fees, annual registration fees for attorneys are pretty steep. What I'm paying is like $280 a year. That doesn't count the training and everything else that you have to do, you know, the continuing training.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty steep charge, but some portion of that is paid for by the fact that it's a state registration function, so tax dollars going to support this too. Whereas I think in setting up this new entity, I think it's just a dedicated fund that they're creating to pay for it. That's all it's going to be. There won't be some annual state appropriation, I don't believe. But, you know, it's going to cost money, and I keep hearing that as the objection. They say, well, no one, you know, the owner shouldn't have to pay anything. In the climate that people are in right now, this is the big issue. I mean, the funding climate of state and local governments is so grim right now that to get anything out of them that costs any money is a miracle.
Well, I have, on moral grounds, I have a problem with the homeowners funding all of these programs, because the reason they're in an HOA is to give local municipal governments sort of an easy ride on the taxes. And then they're being double charged and they're having to pay again.
Yep.
The other thing, too, is, for instance, in Florida, I think it's something like $3 or $4 per door per unit to fund the DBPR, which has not really worked out very well. But the Florida state government has raided that fund on a number of occasions.
Right, this year they raided it.
They raided it this year. They raided it a few years ago as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a problem with that because, you know, you're putting more money. You've got the government there that's supposed to be providing the oversight. They're supposed to be, you know, honest and above board and all of that. And the homeowners keep footing all these bills. You know, if you want to raise taxes and at least, you know, be honest about it.
Yeah.
I realize it's all going to come from the same pot, but for me it's more of a moral issue.
Well, I think the idea here is like you compared it with attorneys. The regulation of attorneys benefits everybody in the sense that any one of us could potentially hire an attorney, and if we did, we'd benefit from this. But from the fact that they're regulated. But in the case of these ombudspersons and registration and licensing for managers, the idea is that, well, not everybody benefits from this, and not everybody should pay for it. And so it kind of goes along with the club economy model that they're following here. The idea, the way public policymakers view all this has always been that people are getting selective benefits as members of associations, and if they're getting any of those selective benefits from the government, as opposed to just from their association, which of course they pay for that individually as well. If they're going to get benefits from the government that are particular to condo residents or HOA residents, then they should pay for it, because it's not, the rest of the state shouldn't be paying for a service that only goes to a small number of people. And as you point out, the irony there is that in many cases the association residents are paying property taxes for stuff that they don't use because they've got their own. So,
And I would say that, you know, I would go along with that, except that in many, many areas, people no longer have options. They don't have a choice.
Right.
So it's not like you deciding, I want to move into a condominium or a community where I pay for extra amenities and things like that. Then I would say, yeah, all right, look, you wanted to move in there, and you chose that lifestyle, and you'll have to pay for it. But that's not the case anymore, Evan, as you know.
Yes.
That's not the case.
Yeah, when people are getting roped into this now, because this type of housing, as we know, is part of the way local governments have dealt with a lot of their fiscal problems from the late 70s to the present. They've been passing along the cost of growth onto the residents, the new residents of these associations, and basically conscripting them into these associations because it's a great deal for local government.
Right.
And nobody wants to look at that big picture.
No.
You know, they never want to do that. When it comes time to addressing this question, they always want to act like these people just joined the Kiwanis Club.
But you agreed.
Right. Yeah, you agreed. You voluntarily chose the, and then they said, no, I just bought a house. And all the houses were in these associations or the condos. So, but you know, the problem is that, I guess in Pennsylvania, I just posted something on my weblog about this. In Pennsylvania, they're making some noise in the legislature about addressing the issue of double taxation. Now, whether this is serious or not, I don't know. But it has been floated. There's a bill or a proposal that is now being floated to address this question. And also to address some of the other inequities that hit private communities where they, you know, local governments in some cases have some advantages, some fiscal advantages. They the ability to float bonds and to borrow money at certain types of rates, do all sorts of things as local governments that associations can't when they're doing the same things. And so, you know, I've said for a long time that, and I know you've talked a lot about this, that there are a lot of issues that were never thought through.
Right.
This whole thing has just proliferated. This phenomenon has just proliferated with no thought initially being given to how all these problems would be solved and all these inconsistencies would be addressed and the unfairness of some of these arrangements would be dealt with. And there are many, many others. The problem is that right now I think it's very difficult to get the attention of anybody in a state legislature. I mean, here in Illinois, I mentioned the manager licensing. Well, the governor hasn't signed this yet. Why not? Well, I don't know that he's interested in vetoing it. I haven't heard anything indicating that he would. In fact, I think most people think he's going to sign it. So why hasn't he signed it? Well, he might be a little busy with the gigantic budget debacle at the state of Illinois. I think all his time is probably occupied addressing the fact that the state is billions and billions of dollars out of balance, the state's proposed budget. Then they can't agree. And they've passed deadline after deadline after deadline. And the state of Illinois is now talking about employee furloughs and potentially not paying people and IOUs and involuntary days off and all the same stuff that they've been doing in California. So, you know, when you look at a lot of these states like California and Florida and Texas and Illinois and New Jersey and Virginia and Maryland and all these places, so many of these states are grappling with really big structural deficits that when you go to them and you say, let's talk about the fiscal situation that's been created with homeowner and condominium associations, how you're milking them for money, milking these owners for money to run local government. You know, this is a difficult time to start calling their attention to that.
I agree. And, you know, even when it wasn't a difficult time, they didn't want to hear it because
no.
They were just so happy spending money like it was growing on trees.
Right, but at that time, the owners were making money too, because housing was going up.
Yeah, yeah.
And now that has stopped. And it's reversed itself, and maybe now, you know, the owners will start to say, now, wait a minute, you know?
We've been there before, Evan. We've been there before. We went through this whole thing again, 15, 20 years ago, where housing was upside down, people were losing money, people were going to the, you know, settlement table with $100,000 to sell their houses because their houses were worth a lot less than they paid for them. And, I mean, real estate is cyclical. We just never think about this. We never, when it happens, we're always sitting there going, oh, my gosh, what happened? But it's got to readjust. I mean, everything was going up, 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 up.
I don't think there's ever been, there certainly was a recession in 1992, 93.
Right.
But it was nowhere near this bad. I mean, and what has hit the housing industry this time, this is the worst that it has ever been. I mean, everyone I have talked to who's been in housing for a long time says this is the worst they've ever seen. And I don't believe this is just cyclical, personally. I think this is structural. I think that there are some inherent problems in this whole market, in the housing industry and in the way we fund local government. I think these are very deeply rooted problems. And I'm not at all convinced that this is all just going to go away real easily. I think that, you know, if you look at the economy right now, interesting thing is, what does the United States still manufacture? One of the few products that Americans buy that is manufactured in the United States is housing. I mean, you can, when I look at the students in my classroom and ask them to think about all of what they have on them, you know,
mm-hmm.
Where was it made? There's nothing. Normally, the students have nothing on them or in their possession that was made in the United States. Nothing. Computers, their clothing, their backpacks, their hats, their everything. Nothing. None of it comes from the United States.
Right.
About the only thing that we have that is truly a local industry, an American local industry, is housing construction, and that industry is in deep, deep trouble right now. So I think that housing is a much bigger problem than healthcare, personally. I mean, I realize that we have all sorts of other policy problems, healthcare and immigration and everything else. But I really believe that in Washington, they don't get how central the collapse of the housing construction industry is to the nation's problems. They're talking about, you know, the unemployment rate. Well, look how many people are employed by the building of a single house and how many products are sold to fill it. It has been the engine not only that drove the economy in terms of home equity loans and that sort of thing, people taking wealth out of it, but it employed people.
Right.
And until they get this industry on its feet again, I do not, personally, I don't think we're going to have an economic recovery.
You know, you're right. I totally agree with you. I think that we need to look into this. But what I'm saying is that some of the same issues that we faced years ago, and we should have learned our lessons. We just didn't learn them then. And now, you may be right, this is a worse situation. And I think in the meantime, you've got this globalization that's come along, and all of the products are made outside this country. So you're absolutely correct. I hadn't even thought about it. But you've got to look at the housing, and you've got to do something about it. Washington is not. I mean, we've got our heads in the clouds over here. We just
oh, yeah,
don't have a clue as to what's going on in the rest of the country.
So they're completely. Then I think that's really true. That Congress and the president, the executive branch, are profoundly out of touch with what's going on in this country for ordinary people. The middle class is just completely out of touch. When they talk about massive new spending proposals and another stimulus package, which is all the stuff they're floating around, this is, to me, is just insane. If you look at what's happening with homeowner and condo associations and the delinquency rates, all the reports that I've seen on delinquency rates, which, and I put a lot of this in my blog, suggest that the delinquency rates are at the highest they've ever been. And these associations, what are they supposed to do? They're supposed to increase the assessments on the people who are paying and drive more of them into delinquency?
No, you know what they're doing, Evan?
What?
They're fining people. They don't want to take the politically unpopular position of either passing special assessments or raising the assessments, but what they're doing is they're increasingly fining people.
Really?
Yes. And that is how they're making additional money. And that's a power that's being grossly abused. I mean, their members are hurting financially, the ones that are still there. And now if they don't like you, they will go after you. They'll come up with anything. You know, and again, the legislature has empowered them to do that. Kind of scary, isn't it?
Yes, very. Well, if you keep, you can't keep squeezing people like this indefinitely. At some point, there's going to be someone's going to just, people will break.
I keep waiting for people to say stop. You know, I think that's the only thing that's going to change things, is for people to stop, to just stand up and say, I've had enough, I'm not going to take it anymore. But they're not doing that. They're still terrified, they're still afraid, they're still trying to make it work somehow. They still believe that associations protect property values.
Yeah.
And, you know, wake up, America.
Yeah. Well, at this point, this is the thing. I mean, this whole model, if you think about the whole rationale for association governance and the rules particularly, it's always based on preserving property values.
Mm-hmm.
Now, right now, everyone's property values plummeted, and it has really, as far as I can see, nothing to do with, it isn't that, like, well, everybody's property values went down except the people living in associations whose values have stayed up. It isn't like that. What is the point of this rationale? What is the point of continuing with this rationale? I mean, if it was all premised on this notion that the property values go up forever and you're going to have all this equity and this whole model that now is just full of holes. Right now, you know, people's property values are still falling. The most recent report I saw today says the property values are still falling and may continue to fall until 2011.
Wow.
Some people are very, very pessimistic about this. I don't do this kind of number crunching, but those who do, many of them are quite pessimistic about this whole market. And, you know, it doesn't sound like a very convincing rationale to tell somebody, look, you have to give up all this freedom. You can't have the color mailbox that you can't have the largemouth bass mailbox that you want. Because we're protecting your property values. What property values?
Right.
What property values are you talking about?
I know.
I think that really it's what needs to happen here is if I just summarize this the way I see it, there's been a slowdown in the process regulation coming out of state legislatures. That is, you know, we had a period from, let's say, 2000 through 2006 or 2007. When there was a lot of process regulation, you know, a lot of in California and Florida and elsewhere increased detailed regulation of processes like meetings and records and that sort of thing.
Yes.
Really detailed stuff.
Right, right.
And then the beginning of these ombudsman offices and this and sort of oversight of the micropolitics and the workings of these associations. And if you look at the last session, it seems to me that that's slowing down. The bill got vetoed in Florida. Governor Crist vetoed that bill. It had a lot of different things in it in Florida. I think a bill was vetoed in Texas or Colorado as well, because they're all turning now to the bigger picture issues, not for associations, but the bigger picture issues of their economies. You know, the attention has shifted away from what was for them, for the legislators, a minor issue, probably, in comparison now with the states going under. You know, states may be filing and cities filing for bankruptcy. Now they're freaking out over this. And anything that's going to cost money or hurt association revenues, now it kills them. Well, in Texas, didn't they have a foreclosure reform bill.
They had over 100 bills, and I think all of them just went up in flames.
Yes, and one of them was about, at least one was about foreclosure reform.
Right.
So you see, if this is all slowing down because of the press of economic crisis in the States, then looks like the agenda is going to shift here. I think personally that this is the time for owners, a perfect time for owners to start getting better organized, because their interests are very much affected by these fiscal policy decisions that are being made in state legislatures. Their interests as owners. And, you know, worrying about, I realize they don't, you know, people get worried about paying for anything, manager licensing, whatever it is. What I'm talking about is a lot of the decisions being made about the funding of local governments, I mean, associations really are part of the structure of local government.
Right.
And what I see is the state legislatures are in there talking about finding ways to sustain cities and counties and themselves. And who's looking out for the associations and the people living? Who's looking out for the people living in the associations and paying the bills?
Nobody. Absolutely nobody.
Yeah. And that, this is the time, you know, to realize that. This is the time for people to realize that. I had lunch last week with an attorney in Chicago. His name is Tom Besore, B-E-S-O-R-E. And he's a big advocate. He's trying to get a grassroots organization started of Chicago condominium owners. It actually is a, there are some groups that he's been involved with already in an area called Streeterville, which is on the North Shore,
mm-hmm.
North Shore of Lake Michigan, north of downtown Chicago. And they've had some success. They've had some success in organizing condominium owners. They have a condominium affairs council within a group that he's involved with called SOAR, Streeterville Owners, Streeterville something, S-O-A-R. And they have a condominium affairs council. They've had some success lobbying the city for some kind of equity on trash collection and some other things. They really did. And this is the kind of thing. He wants to start grassroots organization that might reach outside Chicago, might even, who knows, go national. But he's convinced it can be done from the bottom up, that there's a way to organize people around concrete issues. And I really feel that people need to start doing that because there isn't anybody in the state legislature. The only people up, as we all know, active at the state legislature level is CAI.
Right.
And there might be areas where you could find a convergence of interests between the owners and the professionals. But you got to have your own organization to do it. And I really feel this is necessary, because if not, the train's going to leave the station.
I agree. Well, one of the things, as you know, Evan, I interview some of the state legislators as well. And one of the complaints they have is that they'll carry these bills for the owners, and when they get to the state legislature, there's CAI with all the people that they've bussed in and flown in and, you know, had provided transportation and meals and everything else to come and say, oh no, we're members of this HOA and we're just very happy. Well, you saw what they did when we were up in New Jersey.
Yes, that's right.
And they're doing that across the country, and people like Mike Schneider and from Nevada and Julio Robina from Florida, they'll say, you know, I carry these bills for these people, and when I turn around to get some kind of support from my constituents, there's no one standing behind me. The other side of the room is full of people CAI's brought. There's no one standing behind the legislators.
Well, why do you think that is happening?
I think people decide that, hey, you know, you're the legislator, you're my representative, this is what I want, go do it. You know, it doesn't work that way, guys.
No, it sure doesn't.
And I keep telling them on the show, you've got to go, you know, at least pick up the phone, send an email, do something.
Well, you remember when, I think we've talked about this before, but it's a big, big issue. Remember when Jean Couturier was flying around the country trying to see if he could get an organization set up?
Right.
And, I mean, this is someone, Jean really understood organizational theory and management. He was a public administrator, and he really knew what he was doing. And he really felt that it was going to be very, very difficult to start from the bottom up. In other words, to have a grassroots organization. He thought you could maybe sort of have a top-down type organization like Greenpeace or something where you, you know, you set up an organization, you find a way to fund it, and then you start putting out your publications and then, you know, send people magazine subscriptions, that sort of thing. But it's not, it, that would, that's not really a grassroots organization. I mean, Greenpeace isn't a grassroots organization. The Sierra Club is not a grassroots organization. It has a lot of members. The National Rifle Association, it's not, it has members,
mm-hmm.
but it's a, it's really a peak association. It's a conventional lobbying organization. And that's the other model. You know, you can have a social movement type model where you work from the bottom up and have a grassroots group. You can have a top-down model that's created like an interest group. But the, people have got to get organized, or the a lot of the costs, this is the thing, I believe that a lot of the costs of running local governments are increasingly going to be passed on to associations and to individuals.
Not only the costs, Evan, but what they're doing is they're using brand new associations as labs to try out new products, because the local municipal government doesn't want to invest in a new product. We'll just force the developers to use these things, and if they work, we might decide to use them. One of the ones we have here in Virginia, in Fairfax County, is they're mandated to use this. It's a, an asphalt product that actually it's a permeable asphalt. And they believe that it's going to be extremely costly to replace this because they just don't think it's going to work very well. And so instead of the county using it, they're making associations use it.
Oh, my goodness.
And so the homeowners are going to end up being stuck without knowing it. This is the other thing. Nobody knows when you move into one of these associations that you're being, you're testing new products, and you are going to be financially responsible to replace this product when it fails, and they believe it will fail. Nice, isn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty bad. That doesn't sound good at all.
We're talking to Professor Evan McKenzie. Evan, you're the author of Privatopia. And that name has become, you coined that name, and it's become sort of part of our everyday language. I don't know if it's made it into the dictionary yet, but it should.
That would be nice. I'll call the Oxford English Dictionary people and tell them to get it on the job.
Yeah, they just had their millionth word. Why not Privatopia?
Why not?
I mean, that explains... Actually, I think it's a brilliant word. It explains what we're doing here. But there is finally going to be a follow-up to Privatopia, right?
Yes, I'm in the final stages of that. It's already been reviewed, and I'm just making the final additions and editing over the next few weeks, and then it'll be off to the publisher for the last time for them to go to press with.
Is it part two, or...?
Well, it's more about... This one's more about the issues we've been talking about. It's more about where do these things fit into the system. A large part of what I wanted to talk about was to answer an argument that has come from all these libertarian-influenced people who keep saying that associations are going to replace cities because associations are better and they're voluntary and they're democratic and all this stuff. And I've been trying to answer this argument as fully as I can, and also to say what I think really is happening. In other words, if this libertarian view is that the municipalities and traditional local governments are phasing out and private local government is phasing in, just like the private business corporation became the predominant form of business organization, the neighborhood, the private residential government will become the, you know, the basic form of local governance. And I don't buy that. I really and truly don't buy that. I don't think that, I mean, you can look around and see that we're in a very difficult time right now, and it's a little bit difficult to predict the future right now. It really is. But I'm pretty confident that libertarian vision of the future is not what's going to happen. In the places where you have nothing but associations and county governments, I think a lot of them are incorporating, or the neighborhoods and census-designated places are incorporating into municipalities, because if they don't, they will get incorporated, they will get annexed by an existing nearby municipality, which has happened a lot of places. So they end up doing what's called defensive incorporation. And also they do it for other reasons, because they see certain advantages in it. So I don't think that you're going to, there will be very many places like these libertarian no-government utopias. And where they do exist, where associations do exist, they don't have this exalted level of individual freedom according to principles of contract. Instead, you have people being told that they can't have a planter that looks like a frog in their front yard.
Right.
Because the neighbors think they shouldn't.
And their dog's too heavy.
Yeah, your dog's too heavy, and your flagpole has to come down too, and you can't have a ham radio, and your kid's swing set is made of the wrong materials, and we don't like your mailbox, and your curtains are the wrong shade of beige, and on and on and on. And, and then the only argument that the libertarians have on this one is...
You agreed.
you agreed. This was all agreed to, because you agreed to the agreement at the agreement stage, except that you didn't negotiate any of it.
No,
it's all non-negotiable. It was all done by somebody else, by a city and a developer, and you had nothing to do with it, and it was all take it or leave it. I mean, it's all just completely fictitious. It's all this consent and contract stuff. It's all fictitious. It's all just fantasy land talk. And what instead seems to be happening, I think, is that, and this is the argument I'm making in this book, is that associations are really getting built into the structure of local government as the lowest level of local government. That's what's really happening. They are being subjected to all these process regulations, so they have to function more and more like municipal governments, at least in many respects. And they're getting, I think, probably... They're taking up a lot of the slack here. When city governments can't do things, they either charge for them. Like, for example, if they can't pay for their parks, they start charging for all the services in the parks. Or they go this route. They say, well, you build your own park, Mr. Developer, and you make the owners pay for it. That's how they get more park space.
Yeah.
So they're using the associations and the owners to do all these things that they would like to have to make their community look attractive, but they're soaking the owners. And I think there's just going to be more and more of this sort of thing, where they'll do less and less for association properties and put more and more burdens on them because they don't have the money. They are being squeezed. And the bottom line here is that associations and municipalities alike are governed by state legislatures. That's really where the authority is. These associations, the laws of contract are limited to the parties. And the overall picture is structured by the state. And the state has the power to decide what the associations and the association owners will pay for. And they can impose these obligations on them. And so can the developers. And I think they'll continue to do it.
There's an article that I put aside, and I'm going to send it to you about Fairfax County. Right now, it's a county with a population of 1 million people, or a little over 1 million. And what they've been doing over the years is they've gone from a suburb to an urban thing. They've torn down all the older subdivisions, the ones that people left the urban core to go to, where they could have a little yard and some place for the kids and the dogs to play, and they've replaced it all with this increased density, walkable, pedestrian-friendly, walkable communities and all of that.
TND, traditional neighborhood design.
Right, and now Fairfax County is asking the question, gee whiz, now that we no longer look like a suburb, should we officially become a city? And what's nice about it is that once we're a city, we don't have to go to the state legislature quite as much. We have more freedoms, and we can increase taxes.
Right.
And it's because in Virginia, there's it's the Dillon Rule, right?
The home rule, yeah.
And so that's one of the questions now. We've gone from the suburbs. We've gone all the way back to the urban model, and... hey, we need to increase taxes. We need to find a way to increase taxes without going to the state legislature.
Well, the governments have a lot of options. Governmental units have a lot of options, and there are a lot of advantages to this. And when people form these local governments, small local municipalities and townships and that sort of thing, when the money makes sense to do it, and they've been doing it in municipal incorporation for a long, long, long time. Los Angeles area, they found ways to get the to contract with counties to provide services so they could incorporate and control their own fate. And there are great advantages to this. And
for whom?
I mean, there can be. And I really think that in order to get the... Like, for example, look at all the economic stimulus money that was showered on state and local governments.
Right. That's
look at
true.
Look at the grants in aid that are available to state and local governments. What's available for associations?
And where's the money coming from? It's all coming from the same people.
Exactly. My basic argument has always been that the essential problem with this entire institution is that it places way, way too much reliance on the owner's resources.
Right.
It's just the whole thing, the whole institution is balanced like an upside-down pyramid,
mm-hmm.
you know, on the resources of the individual owner, on their money, on their time, on their energy, on their loyalty, on their wisdom, their sense of community and their willingness to help others. I mean, everything depends on them all these owners, or a substantial majority of them, being willing to just sacrifice constantly. And I don't think it's realistic expectation. I think it expects too much of people. I really do. It's just... And it's only, unfortunately, as local governments get more and more strapped financially, what do? They use the development process
right.
more and more to balance their budgets. And it comes right back down to the people who buy those new houses.
And they're not building new houses anymore.
No, but that's right. And that, to me, until this whole market rights itself and people start buying new houses again, I don't understand how the economy can right itself. That's my view, because it's so central to the economy. It's so central to the employment picture. So many people were employed in the building and the financing and the servicing of homes. So,
Evan, what do you think people are going to stand up and say enough is enough? How much more do you think individual homeowners and taxpayers are going to take?
Well, I think people are really fed up right now. I think the last two elections have shown personally, I kind of think that Americans operate on what we call a retrospective voting model, meaning that when they go off to vote, they don't vote because most people are not either liberal or conservative ideologically. Most of them just say, how have things been going? And if they don't like the way things have been going, they vote for the other party, the out-of-power party. And they've done that in the last two elections. And I know that the Democrats running the country think that they've gotten some huge mandate to go to the ideological left, and they couldn't be more wrong. I don't believe there's any truth to that at all. That's absolutely not the case. If the voters are as angry as I think they are, then 2010 and 2012... there could be yet another accounting. I don't know who the candidates will be, but, you know, there could be another accounting. I think the country is very, very, the middle class, the taxpayers are very angry. And when they see how much of the stimulus money has gone to state and local governments that are raising their taxes anyway, I think there's going to be a lot of outrage. I mean, the taxes are going up here in Illinois. They're going up all over the place. And the local governments had money showered on them. State and local governments got money, and now they're raising taxes.
And they're raising taxes. I heard yesterday, the day before, sometime that all the national debt boils down to about $37,000 for each man, woman, and child in this country. That's our share of the national debt.
Wow.
$37,000, and yet we're still throwing money away.
Yeah, well, the government. Someone needs to take the federal government's credit card and cut it up, I think.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you.
But the problem is that the people who are, it's the same people. We talk about the people who live in homeowner associations, and condo associations, but they're the same people who are paying property taxes. It's the same people who've been losing their jobs, middle-class jobs. It's the same people who are getting their housing values eroded. It's the same people whose pension plans have been underfunded and in some cases raided. And, you know, this produces voter revolts. It really does. That's what happened. It's funny because, in a way, that's what started this whole thing, was the property tax revolt in the late 70s.
Did it really?
Well, it really did. I mean, certainly condo and homeowner associations were around long, long before that. But what really accelerated it was the property tax revolt, because...
That was just in California, though,
wasn't it? No, it happened all over the country. It didn't happen just in... It got... Proposition 13 was in California, but there was the movement for property tax caps and rollbacks and this sort of thing started in California, and it happened. We have them in Illinois. We have them in most states. There are tax caps where you either voter approval is required for tax increases, or there's so much political opposition that public officials worry about tax increases. They try to disguise them in various ways as fee increases or sin taxes and all this, because they're afraid to come out and say, we want more of your money. Because then the voters say, what for?
Yeah.
And once this happened, once people started developing this tax resistance in a big way, and they were angry about it, because, you know, property values had shot up, and along with that went their tax bills. But if you say your house is worth twice what it was worth before, therefore your tax bill is twice as high, that doesn't do you any good, because the fact that your house is worth more doesn't benefit you until you sell it.
That's true.
And people were furious about this, about their property taxes going up. And there was a tax revolt. But and this can happen again. I have been waiting for a double taxation revolt or something. But, really, there has to come a time when people understand that they're paying both publicly and privately increasing assessments and taxes for what's probably a reduced level of services and for an asset that's shrinking in value.
What do you say to people who say, oh, I don't mind paying a little more if it's going to benefit something or if it's going to protect my property value?
Yeah, I don't either. I don't mind paying more if I get benefit for it either, but I don't think that that's the case.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you. We don't get more. But people will say, "Oh well, if it does, then I don't mind paying more." So they pay more, and they find out that there's really not a whole lot there.
Yeah.
And so how do you get across to them? That's probably not the right thinking.
I think the biggest problem is reaching people and getting their attention. There has to be, in political science we call it a policy window, there has to be a time when you get the attention of policymakers, or in this case the attention of voters, or the attention of owners. There has to be an event, a catalyzing event, something that makes people see that there's a problem. Like, for example, Richard Olten and the whole incident with the flagpole.
Oh, yeah.
That really was, that was a catalyzing event, and a lot of things changed because of that. There were laws that changed, and a lot of people took notice at that time because of what he did. And I think with the fiscal situation, we're reading now about more and more foreclosures and special assessments and this sort of thing, but it takes some kind of a focusing or catalyzing event to get people to see the situation as it really is. Things like municipal bankruptcies, association bankruptcy. I'm not sure what it's going to be, but at some point I think there needs to be a catalyzing event, and then somebody has to be ready to make the case to the people you want on your side.
Do we have a listing of all the associations that have gone belly up? I know some of them have. Do we know do we have numbers?
No.
Any idea where we're going to get the stats from?
I don't know. Well, this is the eternal problem. I mean, where do you get it? It's just...
Because most associations don't want to admit that they're having financial problems, because
right,
that's going to further reduce their property
values. Well, I know there have been many, many newspaper articles from many different states, a lot of them which I have linked on my weblog, where they've said, reported delinquency, property managers and association presidents and others have said that delinquency rates are as high as 10 to 20%, even higher in some places. I've heard this from all over the country, and I'm sure you've heard the same.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very quickly, we're down to about the last 5 minutes here. What can you tell us off the top of your head, what steps that we need to take advantage? You said that we've got this window of opportunity. How do we maximize the timing? How do we get the word out?
Well, there needs to, this. My view is there needs to be one organization that at the national level that serves as a clearinghouse for information and puts out one that has a website that has high visibility, that is updated regularly, and that serves as a place where people can share information. And there needs to be a case made that is available in documentary form, in PDF files, PowerPoint presentations, that lays out the situation that people are actually in their micro-politics, the way they are subjected to threats of litigation that they can't afford to defend, that people give up because of the imbalance in legal representation, the imbalance in political representation, the fictitiousness of this whole theory of, you signed on for all of this, you agreed to all this, and how associations fit into the picture of local governance, because people literally don't understand the big picture at all. They simply don't understand it. And I think I've been trying to do that. I've got my own website now that tries to make some of this, get these arguments out. But there needs to be an organization that has a membership function. I set up this evanmckenzie.com, and I'm trying to spread information. But I think there needs to be a real owner organization that has a membership, that puts out a publication every month, that something like what other groups like Common Cause or Greenpeace or the Sierra Club, these other organizations do.
How about pulling, because we do have a number of small grassroots organizations in various states, how about pulling those under an umbrella organization?
Yeah.
Leaving them with their autonomy,
yeah,
but pulling them together so that they can take a look at the national picture?
Exactly. That's what has to happen. They all have their own, the state laws are different, and there are many different approaches to dealing with different state legislatures. What works in Arizona might not work in Florida. That's fine. I mean, in terms of legislative action, I think everyone needs their own agenda. But in terms of making the basic case of the position that owners are in, there needs to be one organization. That's my opinion. One national organization to make the case for owners in these associations, to advocate on behalf of the things that everybody knows are the problems. There may be different solutions in different states, but the basic pitch for owners should be pretty much the same everywhere.
Evan, thank you so much. It's always a lot of fun having you on, and I know that there are a lot of things that we didn't get to that I was hoping to cover, but you've got so much detail and so much information that it's great.
Well, we can talk again soon. I'd be happy to do it, Sue, anytime.
Oh, thank you. You'll definitely be back on.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us today. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet. The writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.